Hi, I'm Tom Savage, professional musician and songwriter and host of Leave It All on the Stage. This CFRC radio show and podcast series explores the challenges of the working musician in the 21st century, while also identifying the many joys inherent in the artist's life. Episodes feature special guests discussing a range of topics, and whether you're new to the music scene, a veteran performer, or a music fan, there's something here for you. Music equals life. Thanks for joining us. The profit motive has gone out the window when it comes to recording and releasing music these days. With the advent of streaming services, people are purchasing less music, and this change in habits has made recovering the costs of recording an album increasingly difficult. A labor of love is a beautiful thing, but I think recording artists shouldn't need to drown in debt when they release music out into the world. So what's the answer? Why bother making albums anymore? That is the question for today's episode of Leave It All on the Stage. And joining me today, we have veteran musician, songwriter, producer, record label, venue owner, Chris Brown. He started out as a founding member of the Bourbon Tabernacle Choir. He's recorded, toured with Tragically Hip, among many, many, many others. And even has the claim to fame of appearing on Tom Savage's 2014 release, History of a Common Man.
I usually lead with that.
I usually lead with that one. And we also have Liv Whitfield, also known as Luella, who has been making waves on the scene over the past few years, releasing her acclaimed debut album, Summer Bummer, in 2024. And no doubt more music to come.
And iced tea.
And iced tea.
And, oh yeah, the peach ginger tea. Yes, great marketing there.
Thank you.
All right, so, yes, interesting times to be making records. And I think it used to be you expected to maybe make some money producing records and releasing them and things like that. And I would say we've kind of been decimated. And so, like, the purpose of this show is to maybe in defense of the album, in defense of, you know, collections of music and the art form. So what do you guys think of that? What do you think of the idea or the concept of the album as an art form, and what does that mean to you? So what do you think about that, Liv?
Yeah, I mean, I am super lucky because I grew up with my father owning a recording studio in my backyard.
North of Princess.
Yes, shout out North of Princess, Zane Whitfield. So I got to see that inside look starting at a really young age, and have also grown up during the shift where social media has definitely risen as like the number one way to promote your music, and it's completely started to shift away from the album and even like music videos. It's all about like short form content and you know, getting something viral on TikTok, and then, you know, that's sort of, it seems like what everyone is aiming for these days. And it seems like the only way that you can really grow and like to hit like large numbers. So yeah, it's been interesting because growing up, I really felt like drawn to the idea of becoming a pop star. That was my 8-year-old dream. And then I kind of had that reality check as you get older and people start to try and ground you like, oh, well, you don't really make a lot of money in the arts. So I'm glad that I, you know, have given it a shot. And, you know, I also have some really awesome connections that some people don't have thanks to the studio. So I can see how much harder it is to be my age and not have that and try and, you know, hit the ground running with putting out music. But yeah, I have a lot of great people around me that have a lot of advice in the music industry. And so everyone's sort of trying to give their input for what they would do if they were my age in my situation, which is amazing. But a lot of it seems to be kind of based off of what a lot of like record labels and things like that are pushing, which is like the singles, one single every 6 weeks kind of thing.
More of the industry business side of things rather than the artistic side of things.
Artistic side, which sometimes I really like step back and I'm like, I'm taking music business at school right now. And that's kind of because I learned just how important that side is and how much harder it is. Like now it's not like you just like, you know, play a bunch of shows and then, you know, that's kind of how you like promote your music and you get radio play. It's like there's so many other like moving things and it's so much harder to get people's attention. And it's really such a saturated market. It's the easiest time right now to put out music, really. Like anyone can just upload something onto like DistroKid or another distribution site. It's interesting. I, for the longest time, tried to follow the advice, like, oh, posting on social media like 3 times a day, that was the magic number on TikTok. But it just felt really soulless to me. And it just didn't feel like an authentic version of me. And I feel like that's so important in music. People can smell inauthenticity. So it's like, how do you, you know, how do you do that correctly where it feels true to you, but also you're reaching large numbers? So that's, I feel really now, having been doing music for 4 years, I've kind of taken a step back to reevaluate. And I am a big advocate for the album and world building. And I think that's the way to connect with people, you know, like really putting everything you have into this vision. I think, at least for me, that's what I want to do. And I don't want to, you know, make myself miserable just like putting out like songs every 6 weeks and, you know,
not following a playbook to say, no, this is how you're supposed to release things or whatever, just create something you can a piece of art.
Yeah, that's what I'm like in this for, you know. I obviously was hit with the harsh reality at a young age that everyone says, oh, musicians don't make any money, so it's not like I'm in this industry for money.
Right.
I want to just be able to, you know, eat and be able to make music. So
good goals.
Yeah.
Really good goals.
Chris.
Yes.
The veteran's point of view, making so much music for so long.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you grow up on the art form, as Liv has, it's natural and it becomes part of your rhythm of expression. There's a really great Joni Mitchell line from years ago where she said, and now every song is just a poker chip. Which is exactly what you're talking about. Like, I'm supposed to bet on whether this is going to get a response or not.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all doing music to contact something within ourselves. There's the seduction of the response and the necessity of the context, the social context of it, that you got to be aware of. But it's like, I think it's always been this way, you know.
It's just sort of on warp speed now.
Well, it's on warp speed, and also people used to spend $500,000 on a record, and they would keep 17 points on that record. So if it sold 1 million, if you work the math backwards, it's the same economy as actually selling a few thousand yourself right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's different metrics to that. Like, oh yeah, right, because if you were selling 1 million, it was on the radio and you had payola behind you and it was buying you record gold, and then therefore you got on Saturday Night Live or whatever. There's, you got in front of many audiences, but now we have direct access to audiences and everything we do has an immediate global context. So what's the problem? Like, I mean, one time Willie Nelson told me that he made more money off of the royalties for Crazy than he does touring every year. And this is at age 74. Mm.
Yeah.
Why does he tour? Yeah. Same reason why we make records, mm-hmm. right? And it was the same thing being on the road with B.B. King. Like, and I listened to those folks. Like, you know, in terms of those people or Neil Young, like people who have their entire lives in music, watch what they do because it hasn't been a straight line, right? Like Neil had records that he made that the record company said, it doesn't sound Neil Young enough, you know? And now they, you know, case in point, he's been doing so much archival work the last decade or so and mining this vast jungle of material that was created because he's an artist, you know?
Yeah.
And I think for me, like the paradigms or examples, you know, whether they're commercial or non-commercial, it's like we're doing it because we want to do it. And one time when I was on tour with B.B. King, I got to go. He was getting this award. It wasn't the Nobel, but it was a Swedish music award. And we're in this the consulate in New York, and there's only about 30 people there, but there's this guy wearing a tux, and I'm like, who is that dude? It's an older dude. And when B.B. accepted his speech, he goes, well, first thing I got to do is shout out Ahmet Ertegun before I say anything. Well, that's Atlantic Records, right? And then talking to Ahmet, he's like, he made Led Zeppelin records, and they made The Shape of Jazz to Come with Ornette Coleman, right? And that was a record label. And if they wanted to hear Professor Longhair, they had to travel to where he was. There was no college music conference. You know, these A&R people were curatorial in their gigs, and they did it because they wanted to see music made. So they knew that this record would sell 3 or 10 million, and this one would sell 200,000, and this one might sell 500, but it all flowed because they wanted to get that made. So
it was also like a different time of like there was a separation between the business, like, the business people are allowing the artists to do things, or allowing A&R freedom to try a bunch of different things, like you know, from Ornette Coleman to Led Zeppelin, as you say. Now maybe more dependency on algorithms.
Well, like Liv was saying, that it's like, no, you have to release something with this frequency, and you know, mm-hmm. for the sake of teasing an algorithm. Now, I'm saying it's always been thus. Because you also had people who were just only about the commercial imperative. And that's fine. And I have many friends who've been incredibly commercially successful and have sought that. And that's great. And the two things don't have to be mutually exclusive.
No.
But anybody telling you, oh, don't release an album, does not care about your mode of expression.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They want to monetize what you're doing. And again, that's fine. Like, there's nothing moral or immoral about that. It's just, it's a separate thing. So if we're going to continue to make albums or continue to paint pictures or write books, you know, we do so because we have something to say. And I would say growing up within that medium, it's part of the rhythm of our lives.
You know? Yeah, for sure. For sure. I keep saying that I'm not going to make another album.
Really?
And then I make another album.
I'm working on 4 right now.
Are you?
Yeah.
Well, I was just in your dad's studio there, making a record with the Millwrights.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I heard it's great.
So, and that, I wasn't expecting to do that.
Yeah.
But it's fun. That kind of, like, it's a thing, like, where you get jazzed about an idea, and some, the idea is not always there. So I get into this space where it's like, yeah, well, maybe I'm done making albums, and then something will happen. And in the case of this record, it was Damien bugging me about recording this one song. Because we'd play at Tim Sheffield's charity events, mm-hmm. and he'd be like, "Oh, you got to record Good and Drunk with us. You got to record Good and Drunk for 2 years." We'd go to these, you know, for fundraising for Kingston Street Mission or something, and we'd get up and play, and he'd be like, yeah, you got to record Good and Drunk. And I was like, well, and then I said, well, I don't really do the single thing.
Yeah.
So I said, but I bet you I got a bunch of tunes. And that's how that ended up to be, I think it was 14 songs that we did.
Yeah, it's called a relationship, not a marketing concept.
Yeah.
Right. Right?
Yeah.
And like what you're talking about growing up inside of that field, but like where you build relationships and the expression emanates from that, you know? I don't think we really have to blink as artists like now because workers control the means of production. Like, you know, if you're spending, you know, I like to spend money on records. I like to get paid for making records. Mm-hmm. The economy of it is paying the people and artists who are making it.
Yeah.
You know, like the producer, the various musicians, people doing your artwork. Mm-hmm. There's your nut, you know. But I think what is different is the way it's monetized is very different because the value, like for instance, when we were young and touring, selling albums from the stage brought you in another $800,000, $2,000 a night and made touring viable. It's not like that.
Mm-hmm.
However, we didn't put out a record and immediately have people writing us from North Korea or South Korea. North Korea, not yet.
Trying to break into that market.
I mean, I can't get like...
It is really tough.
Like, I'm trying to find an agent.
Forget about it.
But I'm just saying, so therefore... Like it's a different thing. Yes, there isn't I'm selling you a physical object. However, there's other things that develop your touring in different regions immediately if you do something and do it right. You know?
Well, yeah, and touring's a whole other ball game these days. When you talk about taking away that revenue, it does make it tough. The costs just keep going up, and the money coming in just keep going down. At least in my experience, but I'm still going out there here and there. But
do you think you'll make more records?
Totally. But again, going back to the past year where I kind of took a step back to kind of reevaluate, I was like the whole, I can't do releasing a single every 6 weeks or whatever the ideal time frame is. I'm a student. And then I come home and I need to make money. So, you know, I've been serving most of my, like, working years. Now I'm interning at KPP Concerts in Kingston. Thank you. Or, yeah, go them. and, you know, that's also, like, a fun and inspiring thing to be working on as well. I love the, you know, behind-the-scenes side of it, and I love just working with other creative, cool people that want to make cool stuff happen. But I just knew that, you know, I wasn't going to be like doing the whole, I don't have time to.
That schedule.
No, it just didn't
and
line
it,
up.
And I would think it takes away from the art.
100%.
It's into like a automaton kind of, you know, and where an album gives you the opportunity to rest and think and let things grow and like say one song affects another song and you know
in the context of putting those things together you know like putting there's a reason why these things live on the same record
totally
you know another guy actually that brings up another conversation I had. You have an album and it's 42 minutes. That was the other thing. This is the other thing that started happening even before streaming. Suddenly with a CD, it's like, oh, 72 minutes, 80 minutes.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's one thing that really kind of shredded albums when all of those alt takes and stuff, which we as musicians, that was great for us for research. But it was Tio Marcero who said to me, he goes, you know, did they think Kind of Blue was an accident? It's like, do you know how much editing I did? Like, it's an art form, right? And it had to fit. Like, I like making records that are still in that 42-minute range.
Yeah, I like a 40-minute record. I mean, if you're going to do vinyl, like, it's 22 minutes ideally aside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's for sound quality and all
that. And so. Then you've got, like, the physical object. Like the last, I made a record a couple of years ago, The Ropes, and I was like, I want to sell 100 of these albums, like streaming, whatever. But I just like, I want to sell, like just setting goals that are attainable. You know, that feel, to me, that feels good. And, you know, our friends who are dancers, it's like they work all year and they do how many performances for how many people?
Yeah.
You know, it's like we could like learn from that a lot. Or the kids who like when they started acid washing the trains in New York, those kids were still graffitiing the entire train, knowing it was going to be ephemeral and it was going to last for whatever. But what, it was gone by morning. But it's like those are good cues.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
Liv, like going back to your generation of I was talking to Piner about this when she was on the show too. It's like have some of your friends, your peers come around to the idea of buying merch or the album, like listening to albums, or are they still kind of in that shuffle kind of single type category?
I would say, honestly, like a lot of the, at least the friends that I have, which everyone kind of like is really into music.
And, yeah, yeah.
So a lot of people are still on like the album, you know, the album train. And, you know, it's fun to connect to artists that, you know, put out a whole kind of package along with their album. Mm-hmm. Like we all like watching music videos if they're like cool and following the process and everything. Like I would say most of my friends are very in tune with what's going on and who's releasing what, which is good. And again, no,
are they buying physical merch or are they
some of my friends have record players. Sometimes my friends will buy records and not have a record player just to have
it up
on the wall.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I can't tell sometimes if they're just buying to like support me personally, but I will say like, if you have cool merch, like a cool t-shirt that alone just looks like a really cool t-shirt, people will buy like, at least like my friends will like come to shows and buy artists or the artists like who open for me or who I'm opening for, like they'll buy their merch just because, you know, it's cool and they like the music. But I sometimes wonder like maybe my friend group is just like very in tune with that, because sometimes I'll meet people and they sort of just like listen to whatever's, you know, top 40 trending. So, but I would say like my generation, I think that people are like at least kind of waking up to, you know, the downsides of social media and like the social media artist that kind of like blows up on TikTok and the song isn't, no one really knows like how it got so big because there's not like a whole lot of like quality in the songwriting, but it's, you know, just getting played all the time. Like I think people are kind of waking up to that. Like,
well, and also the how they, it gets to them. It gets to them in a field of other stimuli, where you're scrolling, texting, whereas when you stop, put a record on, and have to re-engage 20 minutes later when to flip the side. Like we have a record player in the main room at the hotel, and it's awesome because, I mean, some of the people who work there, they'd never flipped records before.
Right.
But it becomes this engagement.
Yeah, it's intentional listening.
And now a lot of the folks who are coming to hang at the hotel or between sets or, you know, they go to the record player.
Yeah.
You know, and it's more intentional. And I think if we can, like, not get undone by things like clicks and likes and numbers, wouldn't you rather have a few people that focused on what you're doing and exchanging that than have a whole bunch of people like Kate sings a song on my last record, and Kate Walsh, the actor from, like, she was on Grey's Anatomy, and she passed on one of the songs. She shared it.
Oh, wow.
And it had 20,000 views in 10 minutes.
Nice.
Cool.
Right. And then you look at the duration of those views.
2 seconds.
If that, you know, but maybe 70 or 80. Oh, they went for the whole ride. And so it's great.
Like
it's
into it.
And it's awesome. And that's really cool. But it's like, it looks on, oh my God, look at how many plays that has had, you know, let alone all the stuff that's being pumped up online, which is intimidating, but it's pretty easy to find a bot. Like,
well, I was going to say that I don't know if you guys have heard about the recent controversy with the band Geese and how they came to wide acclaim, not saying anything about the band talent-wise or anything. It's more of how their management went to kind of a manipulated bot kind of system.
Oh, really?
Where they pump the band with bots. So it's like,
yeah,
it's like one example is Geese is on Saturday Night Live, and then, you know, as they're playing, all these comments are coming in, just like, "Oh, what a great performance!" I was like, and it turns out this is a lot of it's just fake.
Oh wow!
And
I didn't know that.
And it's kind of, but it's this happens a lot with top 40 type music.
And it always did.
And it's, but yeah, now it's filtering down into what you would call indie. Kind of indie rock,
yeah, because,
or whatever. So
because they're trying to niche market, yeah, and they're trying to actually sell some kind of window dressing version of what it is that the three people at this table do,
mm-hmm,
which is make music for the sake of making music.
Yeah.
And but this, again, it's not new. Albums were bought gold out of the box,
right, yeah,
so that you would get on the radio show, so you would get on SNL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, just buy those albums, put
this,
them in a
warehouse. This has been the way. And, right, and then they stopped allowing payola. So then you'd play these radio shows and everybody would do it.
Mm-hmm.
All of the bands that were like in top 40, it's a circuit every around just before Christmas time where you play these massive shows for K-Rock and all these huge radio stations, and you do it for free.
Mm.
It's payola because you're doing it because you know you're going to get spins, but it was just another way of doing it without the, you know. And so now I think, why is this worth talking about? Because it's worth for us not to be intimidated by comparative numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I still want, like, your album sounds great.
Thank you.
And I know many reasons why that contributes to that, that you've already spoken of. And that's going to inspire a great many people, mm-hmm, years from now, you know? And that's focusing
on the art of it too.
Right.
It's like, it's not like, is this going to blow up or anything? But yeah, you do affect people.
It's on
whatever level it is, you know?
Yeah, it's faithful to make art like that. It's otherwise, it's, I don't know what it is. Like, but if you go, it's really easy to get undone by the comparative value or other people's attention spots or whatever. But when you really start to peel it away, and look at things like bots, it's like, no, thanks. I just would rather do what feels,
yeah,
proper and according to my context, you know?
Like, yeah. Well, speaking to that, I want to get from both of you, just like, you know, well, when I was in the studio with your dad, we were talking about AI, and like,
yeah,
and just it comes up because you can make a song with prompts. Seriously, or whatever now.
Yeah.
But but what he said was, it's like, you know, look at all of us in this room, you know, collaborating, working together, and just creating this experience for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what's about making an album, and like, the AI is never going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you could take that over to a live performance as well. But what I wanted to ask is, like, when you were recording your album, was any kind of moment during that just spoke to you, that just, or maybe the whole process, like, just like fills you up, you know?
Yeah. Well, definitely. I have a really special connection with my dad because we put out my album together. He produced it.
Yeah.
And the first one I put out was my album Luna, and we recorded that over COVID. So that was really special because it was just us, and we started from, like, I had never written a song before, and there were times we spent like 2 months on one song, and it would change genres completely. And, you know, completely rearranging it. And it was, we always would say like, oh, we have all the time in the world, which is such a crazy feeling to have because life is so busy. And that is something I never say now.
Yeah, in COVID. Yeah,
during COVID, that's, you know, that's what it was. And that was really cool and important. And I got even closer with my dad because of that. And it was interesting to kind of like develop our own sort of relationship because in terms of like terminology and what we were thinking, it was just like so much easier by the end to express, you know, if we had an idea. I don't have any like classical training in music, so everything's just sort of like
the way to communicate.
Yeah,
figure that out.
Yeah, we just like, you know, I like to take like a visual approach to like saying how I want things to sound, you know, like, oh, I want this to feel like sound like floating orbs or like whatever.
Yeah.
And so that was really cool.
Must have been interesting to like meet each other on an adult level, like as you were as peers instead of parent 100%. Child, you know.
It's been interesting cuz I still like wear a lot of hats. Like he's my dad, he's my business partner, he's my producer, he's my bass player, like so that was really cool to kind of figure that out. And then the second time I went back into the studio to record my second album, we brought in more people. I had my old guitar player Dylan Lodge, and he's just such a kind, sweet guy,
talented,
super talented. So it was really fun to, you know, add another person in. And then, you know, we've had Angus Faye came in and did drums for us. So lots of, it was kind of cool to go from just like my dad and I to then like working and kind of doing the whole approach where you come in with a demo and you just play it out as a band and figure it out as a band.
Yeah.
That was really cool for me to like try that approach to songwriting. And yeah, I would say just, you know, the connections that you make in the studio, that just like I could just do that and not even put anything out. Like,
well, that's exciting too, because what you're talking about is the process relating to your life, and it not being cut and paste.
Yeah,
it's actually, oh no, this is the context of what's happening right now. And I'll be like, I wonder what the next one is going to be like.
Yeah,
you know what you're going to get into.
Yeah,
it's part of your experience.
One night at the hotel, Liam Cole was over and I was just sitting at the piano and he was playing drums, and the mics were up and we ended up recording 8 improvisations with no rhetorical premise. But it was like, the more we listened to them, we were like, these sound like songs.
Yeah.
We were just in this mode. And so now Kate and I are writing into those forms
as
played in that order. Like,
that's cool.
Yeah, and it's like, because we were able to, and it feel, and it's an interesting experiment to explore that way, and trust that whatever was happening that night in the studio, there's an arc to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't predetermined, but the more that we actually apply ourselves to it, the more we go, oh yeah, there's this thing there, there's this feeling there, you can just follow and trust.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's really important. The combination of people, like you're saying, you bring different elements in. I mean, every singer, every drummer, every guitarist is going to hear something different.
Yeah.
And
have slightly different approaches.
Yeah. And here's another thing, is that if the relationship is artistic, it's based on trust.
Yeah. Definitely.
If it's not artistic, there's something else happening. And that's a hard thing to create within that framework. You know, it's possible, but it's not going to be emanating the same way. And I don't think it's going to be as interesting or as lasting, you know. Scott Harding, a dear friend, like even within program music, like he just had to re-record all of De La Soul's records because they never cleared the samples, which is why a lot of the music of that time, like De La Soul is like this missing piece in all of the streaming services and stuff. And he was talking about how he's going back to the loops and that they were asymmetrical. They weren't gridded.
Ah.
Right? They were on the MPCs. The loops were the loops. And they were done at the time. Like, you know, and now they're replaying into them. They've all been done. They've been replaying into them live. But that was a really interesting thing because you think, oh, hip hop or program music. It's like, no, those records were generative and they were social and they have a complete socio-political artistic context. And that's really what we want to be about. We don't want to be about a comparative measurement, you know? That's not art. It's something else.
Something else.
It's something else.
I agree. Well, thanks, guys. I'm going to give you an opportunity to promote things. Liv, do you have anything to promote coming up?
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of taking a bit of a break from playing shows, but it sounds like I have something lined up at the at Spicer's this summer.
Yeah, you do.
Spicer's Wolf Island, everybody.
22nd? Is it July 22nd?
July 22nd, yes.
July 22nd. Yeah, come see me play. It's probably going to be my only set of the summer, so.
Right on.
I hear they have a killer musical director over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard that too.
Heard he's all right.
Never met him.
Yeah, he's very mysterious. Actually, he's shrouded.
Yeah.
It's me, just so you know.
I think his name is Sam Tavage.
Sam Tavage.
Egg of Ismont. Chris.
Okay. I have something fun that's happening on June 17th. Dave Wall from the Bourbon Tabernacle Choir and Jason, who grew up in the Bourbons with me, we're going to do the music of Big Pink at the hotel with Liam Cole and Kevin LaCroix. That's going to be really fun. Kate and I are working on a new record, and I'm working on three solo records right now where I'm working on a record. The thing that I'm in the gears of is it's a record entirely made on the clavinet, just a single instrument.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's fun restricting myself that way, but it's such an expansive, amazing thing that I just, yeah. So, yeah, in terms of promotion, like there's music happening all the time over at the hotel in Wolf Island. And,
of course, yes.
You know, Wolf Island Records is just, yeah. Just, you should just listen to everybody. Just keep your ears open. Go on Bandcamp and just go crazy. Like I always find when I go on a Bandcamp to do something for myself, mm-hmm. I'm always finding like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
There is a Who lot is of this? Amazing stuff on
you
there.
You know, and for all of the like challenges of streaming or whatever, it is such a rich time. Like you can find so much amazing music out there.
Yeah.
You know?
And support with a little donation too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right on. Yeah. And lots of full albums on there too.
Yeah.
Just to wrap up our little
totally
episode yeah. in a bow there. It's like go listen to albums on Bandcamp. It's a good way in the streaming world to do that.
Yeah, it's
and get your it's little collection
friendly.
Going.
I'd also like to promote Doctors Without Borders because they're doing incredible work on the planet right now
yeah,
and
right
putting
on.
Themselves in all the spaces where people need to be.
Yeah.
And as artists, I'd like to really support them, you know. So everybody who, if they want to do something with their music in some way that feels connected to things that are happening, Doctors Without Borders is a really good thing to get behind.
Mm-hmm. Right on. Okay. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here.
Of course.
Fun.
Thanks again to our special guests and our listeners for joining me on Leave It All on the Stage today. Be sure to stay tuned to CFRC 101.9 FM for our next show and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite streaming platforms, YouTube, or on my website, tomsavage.ca, where you can also sign up for the Leave It All on the Stage newsletter and get the latest news on my music projects, access exclusive music, and read more about my thoughts on the life of a professional musician. Want to join me in a conversation? Reach out through the website. In the meantime, support your local artists and have a great day.